Hello, this is a message from the podcaster. Welcome to Masterpiece Podcasts, a series of Chinese classical novels. The series has the following titles: Journey to the West, Legend of Yue Fei, Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Investiture of the Gods, Romance of Sui and Tang Dynasties, Dream of the Red Chamber, The Generals of the Yang Family, Legend of Jigong, and many others to come. Here is a brief mention of Legend of Yue Fei. Legend of Yue Fei is one of the most popular Chinese classical novels. It tells General Yue Fei's life story and his lasting legacy. Yue Fei was the Grand Marshal of Song Dynasty against the Jurchen invasion. It can be said that no other historical figure like Yue Fei evokes so much admiration and sympathy among Chinese people. Yue Fei's patriotic endeavor, his martial art and military prowess, his brotherly love for his generals and soldiers, his unwavering loyalty to the country, his filial piety to his family, and his forbearance towards persecution and execution, all set extraordinary standards for the later generations. We'll talk about another title next time. Thank you. Journey to the West, Chapter 2.
Right after he gets his name, Sun Wukong, he's officially in. He's a disciple in Suguri's cave. But the source tells us his first days, they weren't exactly, you know, mastering cosmic secrets.
No. What was he doing?
He was given chores.
Chores? Seriously? Like what?
Sweeping, gardening, fetching water, that kind of thing.
Huh.
But it wasn't only chores. He was learning language, manners, reading scriptures, joining in discussions.
Okay, so he was being integrated, learning the basics, fitting in.
Yeah, fitting into the community life there. As much as a monkey spirit could, maybe. Learning the ropes, you could say.
And how long did this phase last? Does the text give us any idea?
It does, actually, in this kind of neat way. Later on, the patriarch asks him, hey, how long have you been hanging around here?
And Wukong knows.
He says he remembers eating the peaches from a nearby mountain, Rotten Peach Mountain, 7 times.
7 harvests.
Apparently. And the patriarch takes that and says, ah, okay, so about 7 years then.
7 years? That's a long time doing chores and basic studies.
It is. It shows some patience, maybe, or at least persistence. And then things shift. The patriarch gives this huge sermon.
Ah, okay. This sounds more like it. What was that like?
The description is amazing, really vivid. As he's lecturing on the Great Tao, the source says, like, heavenly flowers rain down. Oh. Golden lotuses burst from the earth. Just pure cosmic revelation happening.
Wow. Sounds intense. Covering, like, the secrets of the universe.
Pretty much deep, profound truths being laid out.
So you'd expect the disciples to be just, you know, silent, awestruck.
You would, but this is Sun Wukong we're talking about.
Right, what does he do?
He apparently can't contain himself. The text says he's like scratching his ears, rubbing his cheeks, just beaming. And then he starts to sort of dance around.
He starts dancing during this super profound sermon.
Yeah, full on fidgeting and dancing, overcome with excitement.
That is just perfectly Wukong. Pure impulse of joy. Does the patriarch notice this?
Yeah.
Display?
Oh, you bet he notices. He stops and calls him out. Why are you carrying on like this, disrupting things?
And Wukong's defense?
He basically says, Master, I was just so incredibly happy hearing these amazing teachings. I couldn't help myself. It wasn't defiance, just pure, uncontainable delight.
Interesting. And that reaction, that joy, seems to be the catalyst, right? Because the patriarch then asks him the question.
Exactly. He confirms the 7 years again, the peach thing, and then asks him point blank, what was it you came here hoping to learn?
And Wukong tells him.
Yep. His one single goal, the secret to long life, Chansheng, true unending immortality.
Okay, and this is where it gets really interesting. The patriarch doesn't just say, okay, here you go. He lays out options.
Right. He mentions there are like 360 side doors or lesser paths within the Tao, but he focuses on 4 main categories of practice.
4 big ones.
And the patriarch uses these great analogies to explain why.
Okay, let's break these down. What's the first category? Shu.
Yeah, these are sort of practical arts, like invoking spirits, divination, fortune-telling, understanding omens, things about interacting with subtle energies or predicting stuff.
Does that give you long life?
Patriarch says, cannot. Flat out no. Might give you some insight, maybe some temporary power, but it won't extend your life fundamentally.
And Wukong hears no immortality and...
Immediately. Will not learn. Doesn't even hesitate. If it's not the real deal, he's not interested.
Okay, path number 2. Lu. What falls under Lu?
Lu is broader. It covers the established schools of thought, like Confucianism, Buddhism, Taoism itself, the institutional kind, Mohism, medicine. practices like reading scriptures, chanting prayers, seeking help from deities, following the established ways.
Right. And the analogy for this one, something about a wall.
Yeah, the patriarch says pursuing these is like a pillar in a collapsing wall.
Okay. Bit cryptic.
Wukong thinks so too. The text points out he's like honest, but doesn't get slang, so he needs it explained.
So what does it mean?
The patriarch clarifies, a pillar might prop up a crumbling wall for a while, but the wall's still going to collapse eventually. These practices are just temporary supports. They won't grant true permanence. The structure itself is flawed, basically.
Okay. So again, not lasting. Ugh. Wukong's take.
Same reaction. Not long lasting. Will not learn. Will not learn. He's ruthless in his focus.
He really is. All right. Third category. Jing, stillness.
Exactly. Jing is all about quietude. Practices like fasting, meditation, silence, various forms of sitting or standing still, entering trances. It's all internal focus, stillness, purification.
And the problem with this one, according to the patriarch, the analogy is...
like a sun-dried brick or an unfired brick from the kiln head.
And Wukong needs this one explained too.
Yep. The patriarch tells him, an unfired brick looks solid, but it hasn't been through the fire. One good downpour, and it just dissolves back into mud.
So these stillness practices, they might make you seem serene or pure, but they lack a certain resilience. They can't withstand the real tests.
That seems to be the idea. Not truly permanent or indestructible.
And Wukong. Let me guess.
You got it. Not long lasting. Will not learn. Will not learn. Still holding out for the real thing.
Okay, one more category left. Dung.
Dung. Active practices. Having action and doing.
What does that include? Sounds energetic.
It does. Things like cultivating yin and yang, physical exercises, specific breathing techniques, and even alchemy. Trying to make elixirs.
Alchemy. Like potions for immortality.
Seems like it. Using things like red lead, autumn stone, minerals, and even, bizarrely, women's milk as mentioned, external substances and intense physical methods.
Huh. Okay, so trying to force immortality through action or external aids.
Hmm.
Does this work? What's the analogy?
The patriarch says this is like trying to catch the moon's reflection in water.
Ah, chasing an illusion.
Exactly. Wukong needs that one explained, too. The patriarch says it looks real. You can see it shimmering right there, but you can never actually grab it. It's fundamentally empty, an illusion.
So these active alchemical methods, they might seem powerful, but they're ultimately chasing shadows, not grasping the real substance of immortality.
That's the takeaway. It's not the true path.
And Wukong's final answer, after hearing about trying to scoop the moon from water,
same as all the others. Will not learn. Will not learn. 4 for 4, he rejects everything offered because it doesn't promise true, permanent, long life.
It's incredible, really, his absolute refusal to compromise on his goal. He sees through all these common spiritual paths that maybe satisfy others, but for him, they're just insufficient.
Completely. He wants the genuine article, nothing less, and it's this final rejection that triggers the patriarch's rather dramatic response.
Yeah, this is the part that looks like pure anger. He gets mad.
Seemingly furious. The source says he leaps down from his platform, grabs his teaching ruler.
And it's Wukong.
Yep. Wraps him on the head 3 times.
Oh.
And then he turns, walks backwards with his hands clasped behind him, goes into the inner chamber, and slams the main middle door shut. Leaves all the other disciples standing there stunned.
Wow. Okay, that looks exactly like a teacher losing his temper and basically kicking the student out, or at least shutting him down completely. How do the others take it?
They are completely freaking out, and they blame Wukong, of course,
okay,
calling him this insolent ape, saying he's ruined everything, disrespected the master, probably blown his chance forever. They're terrified and angry at him.
They see rejection, punishment, the end of the lesson.
Only. But Wukong... oh, what's his reaction?
The source says he's smiling.
Exactly. He's not upset, not scared. He's actually sort of pleased. He understood. The phrase used is that he broke the riddle on the plate. He saw the code.
He decoded the actions. So the 3 hits on the head
weren't just punishment. They meant, come see me at the 3rd watch, midnight.
And the walking backwards, closing the main door.
That meant, don't come through the front. Go around to the back door and enter secretly. That's where the real private teaching will happen.
Incredible. He saw a secret invitation, a time and a place, hidden within what looked like a furious dismissal. His perception is just on another level.
It really is.
Yeah.
And Wukong totally gets it. You feel his excitement, like, ah, I solved the puzzle. He's just vibrating, waiting for night to come. He has to sneak out.
Right, at the 3rd watch, which is, what, around midnight?
Yeah, midnight. Pitch dark, except for that moon. The description's great, moon bright, dew cold, all the birds quiet in the trees. It really adds to the secrecy.
It makes you think about learning in those quiet moments away from everything else. There's a certain power to that, isn't there?
There really is. And then he gets to the patriarch's door, and it's slightly ajar.
Just a crack open.
And of course, Wukong doesn't think that's an accident. He's like, okay, another sign. He wants me to come in.
Shows his eagerness, maybe reading into things a bit, but it works for the story. He's committed.
So he slips inside, finds the patriarch seemingly asleep, and kneels right by the bedside. Very respectful, very quiet.
That quiet approach is important. He's not barging in.
And then the patriarch wakes up, and he starts talking, almost reciting this little verse about how hard it is to find someone worthy to teach the way to.
Difficult, difficult, difficult. Mm. The way is most profound.
Yeah, it really emphasizes the value of what Wukong is seeking. He laments wasting his breath if there isn't a worthy student. Which makes you wonder, what does make a student worthy here?
Good question. Seems like it's partly intelligence, obviously reading the signs like Wukong did, but also maybe just that intense desire, that drive to learn.
Which Wukong has in spades.
Absolutely. So he jumps right in, kneeling there. He just asks directly for the way to immortality. Promises he'll be grateful forever.
Doesn't beat around the bush.
Not at all. And the patriarch confirms it. Ah, so you did understand my little puzzle in the plate.
He acknowledges Wukong's cleverness.
That's the great moment. Vindication for Wukong. And then we get the teaching.
Yes, the secret doctrine. This is the core of it, the formula for cultivating life, for longevity.
And it revolves around these concepts. Jing, Qi, Fan.
Exactly. Essence, energy, and spirit. The teaching is all about carefully guarding these, preventing any leakage. Don't waste your vital essence, your energy, or your mental focus.
It sounds like internal alchemy almost. Preserving your resources. How might that apply today, you think, for anyone trying to master something?
Oh, it absolutely applies. Think about it. Jing is like your core vitality, your potential. Qi is your active energy, what you use day to day. Shen is your mind, your focus, your spirit.
Okay.
So preventing leakage, that's about managing your energy, avoiding burnout, maintaining mental clarity, staying focused. It's crucial for mastering anything.
Right, right.
And then the patriarch uses these beautiful metaphors.
Yeah, those are intriguing. The bright moon on the jade terrace.
And the jade rabbit in the moon and the black crow in the sun. Also the intertwining turtle and snake. These aren't just poetic images.
So you said they mean something specific about balance.
Exactly. They tap into deep symbolism. Moon and sun, it's yin and yang, harmony and opposites. The rabbit and crow are linked to moon and sun too, reinforcing that.
Okay.
And the turtle and snake together often symbolize longevity, endurance, that kind of balanced power in Chinese thought. So the metaphors point toward achieving a stable, enduring inner state.
Through this cultivation, it leads to Buddhahood, immortality. That's the ultimate goal presented here. Through this inner work, this planting of the golden lotus in fire, as the text puts it, it involves manipulating the five elements within you.
Gathering and assembling the five elements, reversing their usual order. What does that reversing part mean, you think?
Well, maybe it's about taking the raw, ordinary stuff of life and through focused effort, refining it, transforming it into something. Well, extraordinary. Pure. Powerful.
So it's less about external magic spells at this point and more deep internal change.
Precisely. It's foundational.
And Wukong, how does he react?
He gets it. The text says he listened intently, comprehended the mystical significance, and basically memorized it on the spot. He bows deeply, full of gratitude.
He's the perfect student in that moment.
He really is. Shows he was indeed worthy. He feels this joy, watches the dawn break, and then very carefully, very quietly.
Sneaks back
to where the other disciples are sleeping. He gets back into his spot, messes up his bedding.
Makes it look like he never left.
Exactly. Oh. Pretends to wake up with everyone else, calling out, "Morning, everyone. Time to get up." All innocent.
A little bit cheeky, keeping such a massive secret.
Definitely. But then, crucially, it mentions that from then on, he diligently practices his new skills in secret. He puts in the work.
So it wasn't just about receiving the knowledge. It was about the practice.
That's always key, isn't it? The secret's useless without the effort to master it. Now, after this incredibly important secret teaching, the story skips forward.
Right, 3 years pass. What's happening then?
Well, he's still learning with the others, but it's more general stuff. The text mentions public cases and allegories, external appearances, like learning the basics, the common knowledge.
Building the foundation before the advanced stuff.
Exactly. And then the patriarch decides to test him again, asks him how his cultivation is going.
And Wukong's pretty confident, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He says he basically understands his original nature now. His roots feel strong. He feels he's made real progress internally.
Okay, good for him. But then the mood changes. Big time.
It really does. The patriarch drops this bombshell. The three disasters.
Yeah, these sound terrifying. What are they again?
First, there's a heavenly thunderbolt meant to strike you down. If you dodge that, there's this yin fire that springs up from within, from the soles of your feet, and just incinerates you from the inside out. Burns your organs to ash.
Yikes. Okay, what's the third?
If you somehow survive that, then comes this wind, a nin or dissipating wind, that seeps in through the crown of your head, and it dissolves everything. Your body, your limbs, they just melt away. Utter annihilation.
Wow, that's a graphic. Do you think these disasters are purely literal, or could they symbolize other things, like internal failings or external pressures?
That's a fantastic question. They could easily represent different kinds of existential threats, couldn't they? Like a sudden shock from the outside, thunder, a consuming internal slaw or imbalance, fire, or maybe losing your sense of self, your structure.
Yeah, that resonates. It's a warning that even with enlightenment, you're not necessarily safe.
Exactly. And Wukong's reaction is pure fear. All that confidence from a moment ago vanishes. He's terrified and begs the patriarch to teach him how to avoid these things.
Understandable. So does the patriarch agree easily?
Not immediately. He sort of hedges, saying Wukong is different, built differently.
How so?
First, he says Wukong doesn't have cheeks like a human, so maybe he can't learn certain things. It seems like an odd excuse.
Wait, no cheeks? What does Wukong say?
It's actually funny. Wukong touches his face and says, basically, sure, I don't have cheeks, but I've got this Suri pouch. It's sort of like cheeks, maybe even better.
Huh. That's great. Resourceful.
It breaks the tension, shows his quick thinking again. And it seems to convince the patriarch, or maybe he was just testing Wukong's desire one last time.
So then he offers Wukong a choice of powers.
Yes. Powers specifically designed to help overcome these disasters. He can learn either the 36 heavenly changes or the 72 earthly changes.
36 or 72 transformations. Which does he pick?
Well, Wukong, being Wukong, asks which one has more changes.
Of course he does.
He wants the bigger package. So he goes for the 72 earthly transformations. It says a lot about his ambition, doesn't it? Always wanting more, wanting the maximum.
Definitely. Never settling. So the patriarch teaches him.
Yes. Again, it's done secretly. Whispered instructions, the secret formula for the transformations.
And Wukong picks it up quickly.
Incredibly quickly. The text uses this phrase, when one aperture is unblocked, all apertures are unblocked. Because he grasped the fundamental Tao principles earlier.
Ah, right.
Understanding these specific techniques comes easily. It clicks into place. It shows how foundational understanding enables rapid skill acquisition.
That's a really powerful idea. Grasp the core and the rest follows.
Precisely. So after mastering these transformations,
he's got the secret to immortality and 72 ways to change his form. He must be thrilled.
Absolutely. Wukong's been training for a while. He's made some progress.
Right. The master asks him about his flying, and Wukong describes it using this phrase, sunk. Sort of like soaring on cloudy light. He's keen to show the master.
Use a demonstration.
He does, but, well, by immortal standards, it's not much. The text says he gives a little shake, does a kind of somersault thing, leaps maybe 5 or 6 zhang high. Now, a zhang is about 3 meters, so we're talking.
15, 18 meters up. Okay. Pretty good for a monkey.
For a monkey, sure. But then he only flies for, well, like the time it takes to grab a quick meal.
Oh, yeah.
And he covers less than 3 li. Li is what, 0.5 kilometer?
So maybe 1.5 kilometers total. Yeah. That's, yeah, not exactly breaking the sound barrier.
Yeah.
Not quite. And the master's reaction is, well, it's almost funny, but really telling. He just laughs.
Laughs.
Yeah, and says, that's not real Wu cloud travel. That's just Boo climbing clouds.
Ouch. Climbing clouds. It sounds so clumsy, like you're struggling up a wall.
It really does. And then the master defines what real cloud travel looks like. He gives Wukong the benchmark.
Which means?
Immortals travel from the North Sea in the morning to Kangwu Way over in the west by evening.
He spells it out more, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He says, true mastery means you can leave the North Sea, zip over the East Sea, the West Sea, the South Sea, and still get back to Kangwu, which he clarifies as part of that North Sea region, all in one day.
Wow. Crossing the entire known world, essentially, before nightfall.
That's the standard. And Wukong's reaction is so relatable. He just goes, oh, whoa, okay, that sounds hard, really hard.
You totally feel for him. He just showed his best trick, and the master's basically like, cute, now here's the real deal.
Exactly. But then the master drops that classic line, that bit of wisdom.
Sala, nothing is difficult in the world, only fear the person with resolve, or, you know, the will.
Right. It's the ultimate challenge, isn't it? If you truly want it, the difficulty itself doesn't matter.
And Wukong, being Wukong, is totally fired up by this. He immediately starts pleading for the real cloud skill, promises he'll never forget the master's kindness.
And this is where the master shows he's a really insightful teacher.
Yeah.
He doesn't just hand over a generic skill. He watches Wukong's jumping style.
That somersault thing he does.
Exactly. And he thinks, okay, let's build on that. He decides to teach him something tailored to his natural movement, the cloud somersault.
The cloud somersault. How does that work? The text gives some hints, right?
It does. It sounds quite specific, almost like a ritual. You pinch a specific hand gesture.
Okay.
Chant the true words, clench your fist tightly, give your body a little shake, and jump up. And the result of this technique?
It's absolutely staggering. One somersault, one single flip covers 108,000 lady.
Wait, from 3 li to 108,000 ladies in one jump.
That's insane. It's not just better, it's a different universe of travel.
It's an almost unimaginable leap in ability. And the other students watching, their reaction is just great.
They just burst out laughing.
Yeah, laughing excitedly.
Yeah.
And they immediately start joking about practical applications.
Like what?
They're saying, forget enlightenment for a second. Wukong's got a career path now. He could be a super fast messenger, a
right, delivering urgent documents.
Or carrying official reports.
And because he can go anywhere instantly, they joke, he'll never go hungry. He can always find food anywhere.
Huh. It shows you just how world-changing this power seems, even to them.
Absolutely. And Wukong, with his, you know, innate talent and divine energy, he masters this incredible skill that very same night, just through focus and practice,
right.
That fast. His learning curve is just vertical.
So what's life like for him after this?
Well, the text describes it as pretty sweet. He's Aisha, totally carefree, living without constraints, just enjoying himself.
Nice.
And it specifically links this freedom to, oh, the beauty of longevity. It's not just about living a long time. It's about the quality of that long life enabled by his power.
Kind of his golden age of training, maybe.
It really seems like it. He's got incredible power and he's enjoying the perks.
Okay, so time passes. Spring becomes summer. What happens next?
Uh-oh. With great power comes maybe a great showing off.
Seems so. He can't resist boasting to his fellow disciples about mastering the transformations.
And they're like, show us. Well, the other disciples, they've seen the cloud somersault, right? Now they get curious about other stuff the master might have taught Wukong privately.
Ah, the secret lessons?
Exactly. The text mentions things like hoof methods to dodge the three calamities that threaten immortals and the art of transformation. Skills the master taught him, hoof he whispered in his ear.
So they ask him about these.
Yeah, like, hey, did you master those too? And Wukong confirms. He says, thanks to the master and his own hard work, day and night diligence, he's got them down.
So naturally.
Naturally, they want a demonstration. Show us! Show us! They specifically ask him to use the transformation skill.
And they give him a target.
They do. How about you turn into a pine tree for us?
Okay. And Wukong.
Wukong, maybe a bit too eager to please or show off, says, sure. He does the technique. Yes. Pinches the gesture. Chants the words. Shakes his body.
Poof.
He becomes a pine tree. And the description is really vivid, not just a quick mention.
What does it say?
So, lush, misty, look like it belongs in all seasons, towering up beautifully, absolutely zero trace of the monkey left. It's all strong branches that look like they've weathered frost and snow.
Wow, so he didn't just look like a pine tree, he became the essence of one. That's incredible skill.
It really is. And the disciples. They're absolutely blown away.
Sure.
Clapping, laughing loudly, totally impressed.
Shouting praise.
Yeah, yelling, "Ah, great monkey, what a monkey."
Sounds like a party. But I sense a butt coming.
Oh, yeah. All that noise, that shouting and carrying on, it disturbs the master.
And he's not happy.
Not happy at all. He comes out shouting angrily.
At everyone. Or just Wukong.
He starts with the whole group. Scolds them for being so noisy, saying they don't look or act like proper cultivators at all.
Does he give a reason?
He gives a core principle for spiritual practice.
Interesting.
And sure. Basically, open your mouth and your spiritual energy scatters. Move your tongue and you create disputes, trouble, right and wrong. Silence is key for their kind of work.
Okay, so keep it down, focus on the inner work.
Exactly. But the disciples, seeing he's furious, quickly explain why they were noisy. It was Wukong. He was showing them his transformation.
Ah, so the focus shifts.
Immediately. The master calls Wukong over. And he lays into him specifically for showing off this skill in front of everyone else. Is this skill something you should be flaunting in public?
And his reasoning here, it's not just about being humble, is it?
No, not at all. This is where it gets really chillingly practical. The master asks, "Who's Kurta Bwayusi? If you saw someone else with a cool skill, wouldn't you ask them how they did it? So if others see you can do this, they're definitely going to come asking you."
It's human nature, right? You see power, you want it.
Exactly. It creates demand. And then he spells out the danger that follows.
What does he say?
"If you're scared of the trouble they might cause, you might feel forced to teach them. But if you don't teach them..."
They won't just be disappointed.
No. He says, "They will inevitably harm you. Your life itself won't be safe."
Wow. So showing off isn't just bad form. It literally paints a target on your back. It attracts danger.
Precisely. It turns your private achievement into a public risk. It creates enemies, or at least dangerous supplicants.
That's a much heavier warning than just don't brag.
It really is. It's about the socio-political reality of possessing unique, powerful abilities. Wukong hears this, understands the gravity.
And he's terrified, ashamed.
He immediately starts begging for forgiveness. "Miss you. Just hoping Master will forgive my crime."
But the Master...
His mind is made up instantly.
"I won't punish you exactly, but you just have to leave. Now, go."
Just like that, expelled.
Just like that. Wukong is devastated. The text says that his eyes are just filled with tears falling as he asks, Where am I supposed to go?
And the Master's answer.
Brutally simple. Where you came from, just go back there. That's it.
And Wukong knows immediately what that means. Instantly, that long-forgotten home. Flower Fruit Mountain, Water Curtain Cave, back on the eastern continent.
Does the master soften at all?
Not a bit. He actually emphasizes the urgency, the danger again. Wasi, hung it. Go back quickly, save your life. Staying here is absolutely not an option.
He's tying the expulsion directly to Wukong's survival now.
Yes. It's not just you broke the rules, get out. It's get out before something terrible happens because you're here or because of what you did.
Wukong tries to argue, doesn't he? Or at least delay.
He hesitates. He says, he's been away from home for about 20 years, and he feels this sense of obligation. Oh, I haven't repaid the master's profound kindness. He feels indebted.
He still feels that connection, that gratitude.
He does, but the master just cuts him off completely. Maybe the coldest line in the whole passage. What kindness, what debt!
Wow, a total dismissal.
Total. His only condition, his only request is...
Tajri, just don't cause trouble and don't let that trouble lead back to me. Don't implicate me.
That is stark.
It really suggests something about the master's own situation, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He just demands absolute separation from the messy world Wukong is clearly destined to stir up.
So Wukong sees there's no arguing.
No way out. He accepts it. Bows farewell to the master, says goodbye to his fellow disciples.
But there's one last thing, isn't there? A final warning.
Oh, yes. And it's the most severe of all. As Wukong is literally turning to leave, the master tells him his departure will absolutely, inevitably lead to trouble. Bad things will happen because of him.
Okay, that's ominous.
And then the critical command. Wukong must never, under any circumstances, reveal who his master was, never mention his name, or hint at his identity.
And the penalty if he breaks this rule.
It's horrific. The master says he'll know instantly, no matter where Wukong is, and the punishment.
I will peel your skin and chop your bones.
Jeez,
I will banish your very soul to the ninth level of the underworld, the lowest hell.
Oh my God.
And I will banish your very soul to the ninth level of the underworld, the lowest hell.
Oh my God.
And I will make sure you can never rise again for 10,000 eons.
That's not just death. That's eternal, absolute erasure, annihilation.
It's the ultimate threat. It completely severs the relationship and enforces secrecy with the most terrifying consequence imaginable. It really highlights how important the master's anonymity is and maybe how dangerous he perceives Wukong, especially a Wukong who talks too much, to be.
Does Wukong argue with that?
No way. He gets the message loud and clear. He promises, absolutely, never mention your name, master. I'll just say I figured these skills out myself.
And then he leaves. Right then. He uses the very skill that got him into trouble by showing it off. The cloud somersault. Does the gesture, the little shake, and boom, launches himself on the cloud somersault.
Gone. And the speed of his return journey is significant, isn't it?
Hugely significant. He gets back to Flyerfruit Mountain in, less than an hour, maybe even much less than an hour. It implies incredible speed.
Compare that to the years it took him to find the master in the first place, crossing oceans.
Exactly. The journey out was long, arduous, full of uncertainty. The journey back, even though it's in disgrace, is instantaneous thanks to the power he gained. There's a poem that captures his thoughts as he arrives back home. He reflects on the physical change. He left heavy, mortal, but he returns light, enlightened.
The training physically transformed him.
Absolutely. And he muses on commitment. Most people don't commit to a goal, but if you do commit to the mysterious path, it reveals itself. And he notes that contrast in travel again. Getting to the master was hard, crossing the sea, but coming back was easy.
But it's not all triumph, is it?
No, because even as he's back so quickly, seeing the eastern sea again, the master's final harsh words are still ringing in his ears.
So physically free, immensely powerful, but mentally shadowed by that terrifying farewell and the abrupt end of his formal training.
Exactly. Mastery brought freedom, but showing it off brought immediate severe consequences and this heavy burden of secrecy.
Okay, Wukong touches down on Flower Fruit Mountain, and the first thing he hears, it's not cheers, is it?
No, not at all. The text paints this quite somber picture.
Yeah, the cries of cranes and apes, but filled with sorrow. Yeah, yes, she. It's heartbreaking.
That sorrowful wailing from the monkeys.
Not exactly the welcome wagon he probably, imagined.
No, it sets this tone of immediate unease. You expect celebration, but instead there's this deep sadness hanging over his home.
The imagery is really striking, and that contrast is so important.
It is. It signals straight away that something is seriously wrong. It's not just like a change in mood. It underlines how vulnerable his community was while he was gone.
And the reason for all this sadness becomes clear pretty fast. The monkeys, they're in a terrible spot.
Desperate, yeah.
They've been under attack by this demon, the Andes.
The Chaos Demon King. Sounds ominous.
He's not just making trouble. He's stolen their balloon, their belongings, their stuff, everything they need to live.
And worse, he's captured many of their kin, their honor, their children.
It's a full-blown crisis. Really shows how even in these fantastical stories, threats to basic security, to family, they're such powerful drivers.
Absolutely. It really raises the stakes. It's not just about territory. It's their whole society being ripped apart.
And you see how much they depended on Wukong.
Totally reliant on his protection.
Right. There's this line from the monkeys. It's really telling. Basically, if Wukong hadn't come back within the year, they'd lost it all. The mountain, the cave, everything. Gone.
Wow. So it really highlights how vital he was to them, even before, he really shows off these new powers.
It speaks to that responsibility of leadership, doesn't it? Even when he wasn't there, they were pinning their hopes on him.
It does. It suggests that even back in his wilder days, before enlightenment, he was already their leader, their protector.
And Wukong's reaction when he hears all this, he's immediately furious, just wants revenge for his people.
That protective instinct just flares right up.
It really makes you wonder, though, about that whole enlightenment thing. He went off to sort of transcend worldly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yet his connection to his monkeys, mm-hmm. his home, it's still incredibly strong. So, okay, mission clear. Find the Chaos Demon King. And how does he go?
In Starlight.
Of course. He travels by Somersault Cloud.
The Jinduyun.
Even this early, we get these flashes of his supernatural side. A little taste of the power he's been learning. Notice how casually this stuff is just dropped in. Like, well, yeah, monkey travels on a cloud. The rules are different here.
Yeah, the Somersault Cloud, it's more than just fast travel, isn't it? It's like an extension of him, going beyond limits.
Good point. So his mastering, it says a lot.
Definitely shows how far he's come from being just an ordinary monkey.
So he gets to the demon's lair. And the description is just, wow, formidable mountain. Peaks scraping the sky, ravines plunging deep.
Yeah, and it mentions dragons, tigers, iron oxen, gold coins. It paints this picture of a really powerful, almost mythical place.
It's not just some cave hideout.
No way! It immediately tells you this demon is a serious threat. The lair reflects his power.
Sets the scale of the challenge.
And the confrontation, in a way.
Which is significant.
And Wukong doesn't sneak. He marches up, announces himself loud and clear to the demon's guards.
Tells them exactly who he is.
It's sad.
Basically, your boss is messing with my family. I'm here to settle things.
Laying down the gauntlet, no messing around. It's a clear challenge. He's asserting his rightful place.
And the demon, how does he react?
Arrogance, just pure arrogance.
Sees Wukong, this small monkey, no weapon.
Yeah, you're barely 4 feet tall, look young, got no weapon.
He completely dismisses him based on how he looks.
It's almost the classic setup, isn't it? The underdog, the powerful guy overlooking the seemingly weaker one.
It is a classic trope, and it shows that common mistake, judging by appearances. The demon's pride blinds him.
And that underestimation. It's a weakness Wukong uses again and again.
Right. Suggests true strength isn't just about size, it's about smarts, adaptability, cunning.
Wukong's response is just brilliant. He fires right back, counters everything the demon said.
Doesn't back down an inch.
Says he can get bigger if he wants to. And weapons. My bare hands are enough. I could reach for the moon with them.
Wow. The confidence. It's almost audacious.
Totally. And it hints at this unconventional power he has now. This is where we really see how much Wukong changed while he was away.
Yeah, it's a fantastic display of self-belief, and it definitely foreshadows the crazy abilities he's got up his sleeve. He's not just a clever monkey anymore. He's got magic.
So the fight starts, and it's fascinating, the clash of styles.
Right. The demon's got this big broadsword making these wide sweeping attacks.
Ew.
While Wukong uses his fists.
Yeah.
Quick, compact, effective moves.
Agile.
Using the demon's size against him.
That's like David and Goliath, isn't it?
It is. You see Wukong relying on his natural speed and fighting smarts even before the magic comes out.
But then he realizes, okay, fists against a sword, brute strength. He needs an edge.
He needs something more.
So he pulls out some of that new magic he learned. He plucks out some hairs, chews them up, spits them out, shouts, change.
And bam, hundreds of little monkeys appear.
His hair transforms. This is the first really big display of that transformative magic from Subodhi. Completely unexpected.
It's a huge moment. Shows he's moved from just being naturally strong to someone who can literally bend reality.
So creative. So unpredictable. That's Wukong.
It's definitely not your standard honorable duel, which makes it so much better.
And these little hair monkeys, they work.
Surprisingly effective, yeah.
The text says they just swarm the demon, hugging, pulling, tripping him up, scratching. Even going for the eyes, the nose.
Total chaos. They overwhelm him with sheer numbers and, well, dirty tricks.
It's wonderfully anarchic. It kind of shows how sometimes the weirdest solutions are the best ones.
It really highlights the power of, like, collective action and thinking outside the box.
The demon, relying on his sword and strength, he's just not ready for that kind of chaos.
No defense against it. Raises that question again. What's real strength? Is it just one guy's might? Or is it using everything you've got, even magically created backup?
So amidst all this chaos, Wukong sees his chance.
Seizes the moment.
Grabs the demon's own sword. And ends it decisively.
Sure, sir, both. One strike to the head, done.
It's a clear sign. Wukong now has the power, and he'll use it to protect his community. Swift. Brutal, maybe, but effective.
It is. Shows his training worked, and he's willing to do what it takes. He's pragmatic. Protecting his monkeys comes first for fancy rules of combat.
So, demon defeated. Now what?
Clean up. Restore order.
Right. He frees the captured monkeys, gets their stolen stuff back, and then, pretty dramatically, he burns the demon's lair. The...
Ooh.
Purifies it.
Burns it right down. Claims it back. It feels symbolic, like cleansing the place. Absolutely. Removing the threat completely. Reclaiming their home physically and, yeah, metaphorically. For a start.
And then the big return home. Wukong uses his magic again.
Ooh, booshes everyone back to Flower Fruit Mountain on a magical wind.
The reunion must have been incredible. Pure joy. Relief. Can you imagine how those monkeys felt? Seeing him back victorious.
Oh, amazing. Their leader, back from the dead almost. Not just alive, but powerful enough to save them all. Brings back the lost ones.
Solidifies his hero status right there.
Definitely.
And Wukong, always the performer, he tells them his story.
Fills them in.
His journeys, learning human ways, and finally getting enlightenment in the West. Learning how to become immortal.
Provides the context for his new powers. It's his origin story for his own people.
Explains everything. Solidifies his new status. He's not just back. He's back transformed. A new era for Flower Fruit Mountain.
Under his leadership, yeah.
And finally, there's this moment that really cements their bond. He tells them his new name.
Given by Patriarch.
Sun Wukong. And the monkey's reaction is just lovely.
Mm-hmm.
They basically say,
Is it? Is it? Wushun. Nobody see a button of it.
Sun Wukong. Meaning, if the great king is old Sun, Sun is his surname, then we're all second Sun. Third Sun, Little Sun. We're one family of Suns, one nation of Suns, one whole nest of Suns.
Yeah, they embrace his name, make it their own family name too. That's powerful. Unity.
Yeah, it shows that deep connection. They're not just followers, they're kin now.